Well, we get things underway. Well, let's do a musical introduction. I think it seems appropriate for our next guest here on the program. Our next guest is a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. He's the author of several books, including The Death of Expertise, a five-time Jeopardy champion, and not the world's biggest Led Zeppelin fan. Tom Nichols joins us this afternoon. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro.
Who knows? You know, you can leave the Republican Party. That's one thing. But diss Led Zeppelin and the world goes crazy.
I'm thinking that one, that's going to be on my tombstone. That'll be the only thing I'm remembered for. I didn't like Led Zeppelin.
Well, I don't completely disagree with you on that, but I think you might have ruined Thanksgiving for Joe Scarborough.
Well, when I said that I would rather listen to the first Boston album than any Led Zeppelin album, that's when all hell broke loose. So, but you got to own it if that's how you feel.
Absolutely. So you made a lot of waves earlier when you announced your departure from the Republican Party. You've been a never Trumper for quite some time. But for you, what was the point of no return? What made you realize you could no longer be a part of the Republican Party?
Well, first, I should say that I don't represent the War College or the U.S. government, obviously. These are my personal views. And my own view on it, it's strange. I mean, there were certainly more well-known Republicans than me who had left, including George Will and Max Boot and a few others, over major things. I mean, over the election of the president himself, the primaries, some of the president's early behavior. For me, it was a small thing, and it was a kind of a final straw thing. I almost decided it was over after the Helsinki summit, which I thought was just an appalling moment. One of the worst moments in any American presidency I'd ever seen. And I had expected that other Republicans would feel the same way, and they didn't, or they didn't feel comfortable or courageous enough to express it. But what really did it was Susan Collins' speech about Judge Kavanaugh. And I did not join the early pack on Judge Kavanaugh, that he was, you know, disqualified because of the charges against him. To this day, I don't know what happened between him and any of his accusers, but I thought that his eruption in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was partisan, bitter, really beyond the temperament of a federal judge and certainly of a Supreme Court nominee, at that point I thought, well, he's really disqualified himself. And when Susan Collins, who I, you know, had always looked at as a moderate within the party, got up and after a lot of fanfare and making, you know, everybody wait until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, said, well, you know, you all need to get on board because he's a good judge and this is how it goes, and sort of walked past all of that. I said, there really is no part of the Republican Party that is not going to do what Donald Trump and perhaps to a lesser extent what Mitch McConnell wants to do. And I just did, at that point, I realized that there were simply none of my values as a conservative that were being defended by anybody in the Republican Party. And I said, well, that was that when Senator Flake and Senator Collins and others simply just, you know, waved in Judge Kavanaugh. I said that was it for me.
I was floored at the reaction of some people who drew comparisons to the late Margaret Chase Smith. I teach history to high school students, and what Susan Collins did was no declaration of conscience.
I was just surprised by it. I mean, I certainly didn't expect the senator to, you know, to take a stand on this for anything other than principle. I remember people said she betrayed women, or she betrayed, you know, the community of women who in the Me Too movement. I mean, in a sense, as a man, I kind of stood aside from that and said I wasn't going to make that charge. But I thought again after Judge Kavanaugh erupted in front of the Judiciary Committee, and I understand, you know, he was under a lot of stress. Particularly some of these charges that I think some of them weren't true for sure. The, you know, the Avenatti accusers and so on. But nonetheless, you know, going right to what goes around comes around, and this is a plot by the Clintons. And I mean, really kind of, you know, you see a man's character under that kind of stress. And I just didn't I was really shocked that, you know, her kind of opening introduction was, I want to talk about Justice Kavanaugh's views on severability of clauses in the Constitution. And I was floored by that. So it really wasn't that. It was the accumulation of a lot of things over 2.5 or 3 years. And that to me was just, that said to me that there is no, that the Republican Party isn't going to heal itself, that there is no moderate center left in the Republican Party, and that my interests are simply not going to be institutionally reflected in that party.
The Trump agenda is clearly not a traditional conservative agenda. And so why are people staying on board? Is it simply hanging on to power? Is it all about immigration? What are the reason why so many are clinging to this guy who clearly disagrees with some fairly longstanding tenets of conservatism?
Well, I think, you know, the Trump movement raises some ugly things that we don't like to talk about. And I think when I say that, most people will say race. And actually, I would say class, because race and class are intimately connected in American life. I think that a lot of the president's supporters thrive on resentment more than anything else. And I think that especially explains a lot of his supporters among people who are not economically badly off, but nonetheless feel that they are marginalized in the culture. I mean, it's really surprising to me how a party that up until 2 weeks ago controlled all of the branches, elected branches of government, who, you know, had a massive majority at all levels of government throughout the United States, still thought of themselves as this embattled, put upon, abused minority, which is ridiculous. But it's a victim mentality that really nurtures a sense of resentment, and that I think leads you to forget about conservative ideas. That, you know, when you're thinking of yourself as a victim and you just want to get even with everybody in the world, and Donald Trump is the vehicle for that, you don't really care about executive overreach or judicial philosophy or you know, Russian-American relations or tax rate. None of that stuff really matters to you as much as just sticking it to the other guy. And I think that's one reason that a lot of people, at least, you know, judging from polls, 35% to 40% of the public still sticks with him, because for them, he's the vehicle for getting even with other people, which I think is really un-American, but it's kind of how we live now.
We're talking with Tom Nichols here on Downtown. Well, the midterms continue to look better and better for the Democrats, certainly in the House, maybe not as bad as we initially thought in the Senate, and then doing very well in state houses and state legislatures around the country. Knowing that, but also knowing the recent history of the Democratic Party, will the Democrats screw this up if they use their power simply to go after Trump? And is there an implosion coming for the Democratic Party that will be similar to what's happening within the Republican Party?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'm worried about that, because for years, and I worked in Republican politics. I worked for a Republican senator back in the 90s. So, you know, as a lifelong Republican, waiting for the Democrats to screw things up was pretty much, you know, a core part of our strategy, you know, that you could count on two things: that the Democrats wouldn't turn out for elections, especially in the midterms. And then if they did, that they would screw things up. Well, they've now made a liar out of me about turnout. I mean, turnout among Democrats was really impressive. And this was something I predicted when I argued against nominating the president back in 2015, 2016, I said, you know, the Republican Party, this is tying an anvil around our own necks at the time, and it's finally happened. But, you know, will they screw it up? Well, that's a more difficult call. I'd like to think that we have all been kind of burned by this experience of excessive partisanship, and perhaps can start thinking about, you know, building coalitions. But one thing that concerns me is I think a lot of the Democrats believe that this win in the midterm was an affirmation of their ideology. And I think they're still not understanding how many of them were carried over the finish line by the defection of particularly suburban Republican women, and that this is not, you know, an affirmation of you know, some kind of new socialism or a hard move to the left. And if they believe that, then I think we're going to be headed into trouble again.
Well, it's been a particularly interesting week for the president, from attacks on Navy SEALs who conducted the bin Laden raid, to dismissing the CIA's assessment on the assassination of the Washington Post reporter, and then the word that came out last night that he wanted the Justice Department to investigate Hillary Clinton, James Comey, possibly New York Times reporters. Will any of that make a difference?
I don't think it'll make a difference to his base, and it's gotten even worse. I mean, just a few hours before we went on air here, the president now is openly, you know, taking shots at the Chief Justice of the United States, you know, which is would have been unthinkable even 5 years ago. I mean, I remember when President Obama kind of mildly criticized the Supreme Court about Obamacare, and I was one of the people who was incensed. You know, I was one of the conservatives who said, how dare he? You know, the president and the judiciary and the gulf between them and independent powers. And we now have the president, you know, firing back directly at the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. I don't think that's going to change anything for the president's base, because we really have normalized things that we would have found shocking. I mean, we can't keep up with the number of appalling and shocking things that happen every single day. All the things you just listed would have been a massive scandal. Mm. Any one of them would have been a massive scandal in a previous administration. We are now getting fire hosed so hard that we've just given up and we've become numb to it. I think where it will make the difference is, again, in that kind of 15 or 20% of the voters that are now willing to move away. I don't even want to say from the Republican Party, from conservatism, but from the president, at least, and from his hardcore supporters, to put some kind of a check on him. But again, going back to what you said a moment ago, you know, that's going to depend on whether or not the Democrats can demonstrate that they're a responsible governing party.
So, Tom, where do we go from here? How do we come out of this? Impeachment seems, I think, a lost cause for the Democrats, because you won't get the votes in the Senate. Are they simply relying on the hope that the Mueller report is so overwhelmingly clear that crimes were committed that they don't have to worry about senators going along?
I think that's a dangerous strategy, because I think the Mueller report will be, and this is my, again, my personal view, but it's also my view as an expert on Russian affairs. I don't think the Mueller report is going to be the bombshell in terms of, you know, espionage and kind of the way, you know, like a bad movie plays out, right, where at the last minute, you know, the spies are unearthed and all that stuff. I think that the Mueller report will be a bombshell if you understand forensic accounting. And you understand money and how the mob, the Russian mob, the Russian government, and Russian intelligence, which are really all the same group, have been involved in the president's finances for 20-odd years. I'm not sure that that's going to move the needle in the way that people are expecting it to. I really don't know what the Democrats, I mean, I watching the Democrats from afar, because I'm, you know, I've left my tribe, but I didn't rejoin any others. It seems that some of them understand that, you know, they're simply not going to get 2/3 of the, barring something astonishing in the Mueller report, they're not going to get 2/3 of the Senate. But that's at least some of them want to go ahead with impeachment as kind of political theater, kind of for, you know, the way the Republicans did about Bill Clinton, where they felt like just airing this out was going to be an important constitutional act in itself. Now, that backfired on the Republicans. I don't know how it would play out in this case, and I'm not sure how wise, of course, it is. I mean, impeachment is really, you know, the political dynamite buried in the Constitution. But I think, you know, I've finished predicting things, because no one could have foreseen where we'd be by 2018.
True words were never spoken. That's Tom Nichols, author of The Death of Expertise. Tom, great talking with you. You're a fantastic follow on Twitter. Always enjoy what you have to say. I think you've got a clear vision of where America needs to go. If only everybody else would listen.
Well, and with all due respect to the Led Zeppelin fans out there, you know, we can all agree that music is great. We'll just have different tastes about it. But thank you.
It's more than a feeling, no question about it. Thank you, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Same to you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Tom Nichols with us on Downtown.